Anyway, so
Brian said that he'd like us to call him up, and he can be a special guest.
Oh, there we go.
No, he's Brian's a special pest.
Brian's not a special guest. He's just special.
Special needs. Really? No, he called up and said, do you want me on? And he said, well, you know, what are you going to talk about? And I said, the APS show. He said, well, I can give you the non-attendant point of view.
Cute.
Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Hi, I'm Mark Reisner, president of the American Stamp Dealers Association, and you are listening to Stamp Show Here Today.
It's time to send up. Stamp collecting happens when we dream together.
Welcome to Stamp Show Here Today, episode number 45. I'm sitting here with Scott, Cash, and Jeff, and I'm your host, Jessica. You can find us on Facebook at Stamp Show Here Today and on Twitter at Stamp Show HT. Tell your friends they can find us on iTunes, Podbay, and Stitcher. Let's talk about stamps. This episode is actually part 2 in our 2-part series in the APS Stamp Show. In the first episode, if you want to track back, we talked about our favorite memories from the show. In this episode, we'll be talking about what we bought at the show, or our show hall, as they call it on the internet.
On the interweb.
Yes.
Where do they call it that?
Hall. That's a YouTube term. You've never seen a hall video before?
Oh, really? No. Mm-hmm.
Holy crap. There's girls out there that make hundreds of thousands of dollars a year from YouTube revenue.
Really?
Because they get like 6 million hits when they go to Nordstrom and they buy $500 of stuff. They bring it home and they show off each piece to the camera and talk about why they bought it. And they get a bajillion hits for this. I'm not kidding.
Google it.
Maybe we should go to Nordstrom and buy our stamps.
Right?
Yeah, but then you got to try them all on.
Oh, yeah. There.
It's spelled H-U-A-L.
Yep.
Hall.
H-A-U-L.
H-A-U-L?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for those
Your letters are videos. Out of order.
Yep. Okay, so I guess I'll start. I did find a new Hello Kitty stamp. And I found a new thing to collect. I'm going to try to find origami on stamps.
Oh!
Because I found some cranes and it got me really excited because I could build an exhibit out of that, make the origami full size and then show it on a stamp.
Yeah.
You know how to make an origami rock?
Yeah, I'm really good at that. No, her back rock. History is...
Isn't that a basketball?
It's a comet, rock, basketball, all the above. No, Jessica was very accomplished at origami in high school and early college. So,
oh, good.
That's kind of, that went right along with that. So,
and then Jeff actually bought me something. You want to tell me what you bought me?
Yeah. Okay, so it was the coolest thing I think I've ever seen done with a modern stamp. What this guy does is he does this all by hand under a magnification hood, and he uses fine scalpels and X-Acto knives. And he'll take 3 to 6 of the same stamp, depending on the detail that's involved. And he will cut out, you can't see the cuts. He did such a good job. It looks like it's a laser cut when you look up close. He will cut out various parts of the stamp and make a layered frame with craft foam in between the layers.
I've seen those.
So they're about 1/8 of an inch separation between the layers. And then he mounts them and frames them. And so I paid $50 for a single stamp. I can't remember the Scott number, but it was from a series of
American Indian
dances on stamps. And so I got one for her that was the fancy dance. And it's 4 stamps deep of this American Indian doing a dance, actually from the stamp. But it's just this really cool 3D rendering done by hand with this stamp. And I talked to him, and he said... if you have something custom, he will absolutely do it. And so I was thinking of sending him buying 5 or 6 copies of some of the really intricate, newer Disney stuff, like Frozen or Little Mermaid or whatnot, and having him slice some of those up and do some really beautiful stuff, because some of the big Disney stamps from other countries are huge and really intricate with the art.
You want to give him a plug?
I do at home. Next time, I'll put
a link
in
on our show notes.
Yes, he runs a store. He does pre-made stuff. He's got tons of it for sale, and he also does custom work. very reasonable price for what you get, I think. And it's all pretty much one of a kind because every single one that he does is unique.
Scott?
Oh. Well, okay, then. No, I bought an oversized Fleetwood Knapp first day cover with all of the World War II service commemoratives on it. And it's got the Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, Merchant Marine, and then the Victory, and one of the honoring veteran, those who served stamps on it. So there's six stamps on it. It's a combination cover. It's the first day of the last one issued. And it's just an overall huge patriotic design. And I just thought it was really, really cool. And having served in the military, it kind of struck me as very attractive and something I wanted to add to my collection.
That is very cool looking. He has it here in the office, and it's like a large format.
It's a 6x9 envelope.
A 6x9 envelope. It's like the size for like a large Hallmark card. But, of course, it's appropriate era. Yeah, it's got some beautiful art on it. That is really neat. Full color, all the military symbols, American flag. Very nice. Excellent. Where'd you find that at?
Oh, it was a cover dealer out of Texas.
Cool. Kaz, did you find anything interesting?
Yeah, related to the last podcast. And I didn't have one, so I actively searched for the first stamps of the United States, which were the revenues, the first revenue stamps.
The embossed revenues.
The embossed revenues. And I found, at the entire APS show, I found, I think, about six of them.
Oh, wow.
And they were all very dearly priced, but I found one that I very much liked on a document that's really nice and readable. So it's a RM-265, and it's on a really neat cover from 1770, talking about the transfer of property. So I'm wondering if it was an involuntary transfer, and I haven't read the whole document, but I'm wondering if it was a involuntary transfer where they seized the king's land from the people who weren't, you know, in favor of the United States. And so I need to do some research and read the document, but it's a really cool document. Thank you, Eric Jackson, for having a good number of these items to choose from.
Cool. I inadvertently got hooked at something at the last minute.
You mean stamps?
Yes, besides stamps. Further in, more detail. I discovered there's some really cool position varieties for C-11s. Since it's two different colors printed at different times, mm-hmm. you can get some really fun shifts. Mm-hmm. So I sat down with a rather large volume dealer who had, I'd probably say, 60 or 70 C-11s, mint, hinged, in used, any condition you could find. And I pulled out 9 or 10 of them in all different weird positions, where the plane is totally into the text at the top, where it's covering up the text at the bottom with blue ink.
Is just that all what kinds you tried to show stuff. Me? You know, just like,
oh, that's my a, yeah, kind of just goes like, whatever.
Just like,
this is a fast plane. This is a slow plane. These are really cool.
I think you're not talking about C-10, though.
So the lighthouse, right?
No, the lighthouse.
Yeah. Oh, it is lighthouse?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because it's got a red border, and then the inset is printed blue.
Yeah. I've seen those. I have never seen any really dramatic shifts on it, though.
Yeah, I have one where the plane is almost completely into the text at the top.
Oh.
So, and I ended up talking to the dealer. I think it was Mike at A&D. And he said, yeah, there's a whole following of people that collect those for that same kind of reason, that they can be kind of desirable for some of that. So I have a new thing to do. Yay!
Cool.
Okay, well, that about wraps it up. Enjoy the following interviews. I'm sitting here with Philip Williams of Esper, and he's just telling me about how they got their name. So he's going to tell me again on tape. So here we go.
Okay, the name Esper is derived from the founder of the organization. Her name was Dr. Esper Hayes. And the letters in her name make up the name of the organization, the Ebony Society of Philatelic Events and Reflections. And it's an organization which is comprised of stamp collectors dealing with African-American heritage and on U.S. stamps as well as worldwide stamps. The organization itself has different chapters, mostly on the eastern part of the United States, in New York, North Carolina, New Jersey, Washington, D.C. That's where the majority of the members are. And they have meetings maybe every month, every 2 or 3 months, where they talk about upcoming stamp events and activities that the chapters plan. And I met the founder, Dr. Hayes, at our 25th anniversary, which was our silver anniversary. I met her in North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, and met a lot of African-American stamp collectors. Because when you collect stamps and you have your particular interest, you don't realize that there are so many more people that have that same interest until you go to something like a convention or something like that. And that's what happened to me when I went to the Join Esper and then went to that national convention.
What is your earliest memory of stamp collecting?
Well, my earliest remembrance of stamp collecting was in 94. I was coming through a library during Black History Month, and I saw a collection of a few African-American stamps on display. And I stopped, and I wrote down the names of the stamps, and I said, I want to get these. And I went to a post office and walked up to the clerk, gave her my list, and said, I'd like to buy these stamps. And she said, she laughed and she said, you know, these stamps have been off sale for years. About the only place you'll be able to find them would be at a stamp show. And she said, there's a stamp show going on this weekend. She said, at this place called the Wonderland Mall. So I went to Wonderland Mall, and the first time I have ever experienced a stamp show reminded me of a flea market. We had all of these dealers and all the different topics and so on. And I went to a dealer and I showed him my list and I said, do you have any of these stamps I'd like to buy? And it's something, because my list was made up of African-American stamps, and the dealer told me, I have no demand for African-American stamps. Therefore, I don't have any. But if you look around, I'm sure there are some dealers that would have them. And I looked and I found a couple of dealers that told me, they took my name and everything, and they said, we go to a lot of shows, and we can locate a lot of these stamps for you. And they did, and they called me, and I would meet them at a show, and they'd have the stamps for me. And that's how I got into it. And one dealer told me, you know, your list is not complete. You should get this book from the Postal Service called A U.S. Guide to Stamps, and it has all the stamps that you need in that book. And that's what I did, and started putting stamps in order by Scott number and date of issue. And eventually I collected every single stamp that the U.S. has put out that honor African-American heritage. And that's the extent of my collection. People have suggested that I expand it, you know, more than that. And I went into getting covers and commemorative panels. And I also have the latest press sheets that the Postal Service puts out. But that's my topic. That's my interest in collecting stamps, African Americans on U.S. postage stamps.
So what's the jewel of your collection?
What is the what?
What's the jewel of your collection?
The jewel of my collection, I have a full sheet of the very first stamp, full sheet of Booker T. Washington. I would say that's the jewel of my collection.
So have you gained a lot of knowledge about your heritage through stamp collecting?
Yes, I have. You know, I was a school teacher. I taught for 39 and a half years. And my interest in stamp collecting, I talked about my stamps in what we call a Friday forum at my high school. And I introduced students to stamp collecting. And I always said that every stamp is its own little work of art, and every stamp has a story that stamp can tell. Because if it's about an individual, that individual has a story, his life and what he did, his accomplishments. And if it's buildings or something like that, that building has a history. So there's a lot of information that you can learn just about history in stamp collecting. So any stamps that you collect, if you collect dogs, you can find out about the breed of dog and stuff like that. If cats, find out about the habits of cats. So anything. Flowers, how you grow that particular flower. So anything that's on a stamp has a history and something you can learn from.
So how might someone get in touch with you guys to join your organization?
Okay, we have pamphlets and literature. We also have an email address. And our email address, if you go to esperstamps.org, it would tell you all about the organization. It has links on that website, and it tells you the history of the organization, gives you a list of all the stamps that are dealing with black, you know, history, and stories about personalities on the stamps. So esperstamps.org is the name of our website.
And before I go, I thought I'd ask you about the Maya Angelou controversy. Do you have anything to expand on with that?
Not really. I just understand that that quotation that's on that stamp was not hers originally. That it comes from a book that was written, I guess, about her by some other author. And that author, I don't know if it was that author's quotation or what it was, but I was just told that it was not her original quotation.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
All right. You're welcome.
I'm sitting here with Len McMaster of the U.S. Possessions Philatelic Society. And you can tell us a little bit about what they're about and how to join.
Yes, our society is devoted to all aspects of U.S. possessions. And what I mean by that is the areas around the country where U.S. Postal Administration has operated postal services, like during the Spanish-American War, we overprinted stamps and used them. Our soldiers used them in Cuba, Guam, Philippines, Puerto Rico. We used them in Shanghai, China, during the Boxer Rebellion. And during that turn of the century, there were a lot of coaling stations for our ships in the Pacific, so there were a lot of islands that had coaling stations. Samoa had things. After the Second World War, we operated the postal system in France and Germany, and so those kind of operations where we had some postal administration connection from the U.S. So possessions is a fairly broad area. It includes Hawaii and the other named companies that we are the countries that we talked about.
So you guys are the collectors of overprints, kind of.
Yes, much of what we do are overprints of the that have been used, print stamps printed in the United States and then overprinted for use in these other countries.
So what's your earliest memory of stamp collecting?
High school, I started collecting. It was a lot of fun in those days. It was just U.S. stamps. And I found that as older I got, I needed to specialize in something to concentrate my interests.
Do you have some kind of heritage with one of these places? Or?
No, actually, I got my start in this my personal collection when my wife was teaching sixth grade. She asked me to help with a stamp club, and I was trying to show the students the different ways you could collect. And so overprinted stamps was one of those areas, and I kind of got hooked on U.S. possession stamps.
When I go shopping for stamps, when I see overprints, I get way too excited about them because it's like it shows another link to that stamp that versus the one without the overprint. It's like a little extra bonus, I think. How might someone get in touch with you to join your organization?
Well, we have a Facebook page, U.S. Possessions Society, and we have a website that's U.S. Possessions Philatelic Society, and we can be reached on both of those. The society email address is USPPS.possessions@gmail.com.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for talking to me.
I'm sitting here with David Ziemer with the Canal Zone Study Group. He can tell us a little bit about his organization.
Yeah, we focus mainly on the Panama Canal Zone, starting in 1904 when the United States opened up the first post office in the Canal Zone going until 1979. We have 500 members worldwide. We publish a quarterly publication. Our dues are $12 a year. We have a very good website, canalzonestudygroup.com or czsg.org. And we have a lot of free information on there. We have a lot of free documents that you can pick up and pull down in PDF format if you want to find out more about us. And last year was the 100th anniversary of the opening of the Panama Canal. So that was our biggest year ever. We appeared in four or five different stamp shows. We had more exhibits than we ever have had before. And we're carrying on that momentum into the first 101st year.
So I'm guessing you were the other person insulted that there was no commemorative for that anniversary.
Oh, boy, yeah. It's a little bit of politics because some of the political parties weren't so happy that the canal got turned over to Panama. And ever since then, they resented it. For example, if you look at the World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., they've left out the Canal Zone, even though we have a lot of veterans that came from the Canal Zone. My father flew a P-38 in World War II, but there's no commemorative for him or anybody else that came from there. But this is all politics. It goes back to Carter making an agreement to sign over the canal. And ever since then, there's a lot of people that resent that. So, yes, we would have liked to have had a stamp for something that was as big as landing on the moon 100 years ago.
Yeah, it definitely revolutionized trade, and I was so insulted that there wasn't a stamp for it. What's your earliest memory of stamp collecting?
Well, when I grew up in Balboa Canal Zone, and so the kids would have a stamp collecting season, would have a marble season, would have a baseball season. And so you did stamps for a while, or you did coins for a while, or you did baseball cards during the baseball season. And like everybody else, you started when you're 7 or 8 years old and your grandmother and aunts gave you stamps. And you got to be about 12 or 13 years old and you did other things. You did more sports. You discovered girls. You tried to get through high school and college. So I put down everything and came back to it when I was about 40 years old. And that's 30 years ago. So I'm really deep into it now. Now I get to do what I want.
Do you have a jewel that you can tell us about in your collection?
Yeah. The jewel is actually, it's a Panama stamp. It was made in 1909, and it's an invert. And there's eight of them that exist. And it's never been exhibited, and I've never written it up, but that's my jewel. It's Scott 197A.
Wow, that's definitely a nice example of a good stamp. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Okay, great. Thank you, and we look forward to hearing your podcast.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, I'm sitting here with Robert Ogrodnik. Let's see, how do you pronounce that now?
Polonus Philatelic Society.
And can you tell us a little bit about your society and what you guys are about?
Yes, well, fundamentally, Polonus is a Polish philatelic society. So we have to do with the promotion, the education, everything to do with Polish philately in the English language. That is a very important distinction, that what we do and the publications we put out are in the English language. There are the larger organizations in Poland who do it in the Polish language. So that's what Polonus is. And we are today the only and the largest Polish philatelic society in North America. And we have other philatelic societies like in England, Great Britain, and Australia and so forth. So we don't claim like we're the only one, but we are the largest. Yes.
So what's your earliest memory of stamp collecting?
Gee, my earliest memory is probably at age 6 or 7. I can remember vividly my father giving me money if I would spend it on something wholesome. And he sort of encouraged me with stamps. And it was the Saturday morning trek to the post office where the clerk for the stamp section would save the new issues. And I used to get a block of four. Of course, these were 1 cent, 2 cent, 3 cent stamps at that time, which were, you know, very affordable.
Okay, so what can you tell us? What's the jewel of your collection?
Well, jewel of my collection is a Poland number one. It's one of the gems and one of the goals for every Poland collector is to have the first stamp issued. And the irony of the situation is Poland, frankly, did not exist when that stamp was issued. It was issued as the Kingdom of Poland under the occupation of Russia. But they allowed the Poles at that time in Warsaw to have a degree of autonomy, including their own postal service, and that's when that stamp was issued. So technically it's Poland number one, but it's still under the occupied Poland. Poland did not regain its independence until 1918 after the First World War, and that was the Second Republic of Poland. So that is one of the goals of most collectors. However, there are many other specialty areas of Poland that people strive to collect, including things like camp mail, stamps and mail that was issued during the prison of war camps, concentration camps, where they were allowed to make their own stamps and make their own, carry their own mail, etc., etc.
So your first stamp's akin to our Postmaster Provisional of the United States. Kind of like something that was created before the official stamp began.
Before the official stamp, the Poland number one would be something similar to that. And the others that are different, we have locals, like there were locals in the U.S. Poland has many local stamps, provisional stamps, and we even had plebiscites. And this is at times when Poland regained its independence after the First World War. There were pockets in Poland, like Allenstein and Marienwerder, where there were a number of Germans, Prussians, who were living there, and they were taking a plebiscite to see if they wanted to remain under German control and administration versus Poland's newly acquired administration. And in that period, they call it a plebiscite, and they issued stamps with an overprint. These were the German stamps that were used at the time prior to the First World War, and they each had their own overprints. So this is a specialty area of collection, and there are some people that strive to collect the plebiscites.
So is that like the political satire stamps I've seen of Hitler? Do they do some of those?
No, they're not quite the same, but keep in mind that after the occupation, after Poland was attacked by Germany and Russia, by the way, people forget that Russia attacked Poland, and they had a deal with Hitler, and they took half of Poland, and Germans took the other half. During that period, Germans set up their administration, and they issued their own stamps for use in the occupied part of Poland. And this is what they call the General Government series of stamps.
It sounds like a great way to get in touch with your heritage.
There's no question whether people are from Poland or they are relatives of the families from Poland. But the important thing of all stamps is there's a story and a history behind them. And that's what the fascination is. I think young people are missing the boat when they don't look at stamps as an area of as a hobby. Keep in mind that stamps are the king of hobbies and the hobby of kings. There were more kings that collected stamps, kings and queens, because Queen Elizabeth was a big, big stamp collector. And just a side note, something interesting, knowing that she was a stamp collector, when I was like age, I forget the year now, but my aunt helped me write a letter to the Princess Elizabeth at the time, as she was preparing for her wedding. And I said, could you send me, I had the audacity to say, send me a sample from your collection. Well, you know, I was surprised when I got this letter that it wasn't from Princess Elizabeth. It was from a lady in waiting. A lady in waiting sent me a letter thanking me for the wishes that I gave the princess and encouraging me to collect stamps. And I still have that cover, which is a very interesting cover and very special for me.
Wow, that's a really good story. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity to talk a little bit about Poland and the stamps. I believe strongly in the hobby, and I hope we have a number of young people listening to really take advantage. And of course, we have free samples for people to pick up stamps to start their collection. And Polonus is available on a website. So anybody interested, just look us up and get in touch. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm sitting here with Jean Stout, a member of Women Exhibitors, and she is the owner of the cockroach exhibit that we've been talking so much about, and she's going to tell us the story behind that concept. So can you tell us a little bit about that award-winning exhibit?
The exhibit was really a challenge. I was designated as the outstanding philatelist for the American Topical Association in 2013 and had never exhibited. And the group that I was with said that it was just unusual that someone would get that recognition and never have exhibited. So I said, well, I can do that. And they said, well, you can't do penguin. I was known as the penguin lady prior to this. Now I'm known as the cockroach lady. But they said, you can't do the penguins because that's what everybody would expect you to do. So when my children were in high school and junior high, they had to have science fair projects. And being the good mother that I was, I tried to accumulate material in advance so that they would have something to work with. It was right at the time of the millennium, and there was a lot of publicity out about the cockroach, the fact that it was one of the longest living creatures on earth. I saved all that material, so when I was challenged, I said, okay, I'll do cockroaches. And they just all laughed at me. They said, there's not enough material out there to do cockroaches. And I said, oh, well, there's 8 or 10 stamps. I can do it. So I started off with 2 frames, and the judges kept telling me, you really need 3. And now that I'm up to 3 frames, they're saying you need 5. But it's been a lot of fun. The different places that I've had exhibited it, everybody has fun with it. They all don't like it, but they have fun with it just because of the creepy, crawly thing that it is. And that's kind of how it got started.
So how did you go about acquiring the marijuana cockroach portion of the exhibit?
With the...
The holder. Roach holder.
The roach clip.
Roach clip.
The roach clip was probably the best used across the country back in the 60s. And after my first showing of the cockroach exhibit, one of the judges said, well, you really need a roach clip. And I said, okay, what is it? And he looked at my gray hair and he said, surely you lived in the 60s. And I said, well, yes. And he said, well, it's what they use to hold the marijuana cigarettes. And I put my hand over my heart and I said, well, I wasn't one of those kind of girls. And so I said, well, where do you get them? And they said, oh, well, some of the service stations have marijuana paraphernalia and stuff. And so I said, well, I'll find them somewhere. So I found it on the internet. And you can get them all different kind of ways. They're with feathers. Some of them are made of with stones in them. It's a very creative environment that people are still making cockroach clips.
So this one was an antique one, right?
Oh, no. No, it's just something I ordered off the internet.
You look like a very nice grandmotherly type, so that must have been... I pictured you going to antique shops and going, do you have one of those, clips they put the marijuana cigarette in, Like, you didn't know what you're talking about, but I guess buying it online is probably the way to go nowadays.
It was the safest way, let me put it that way. Some of those places aren't the best area of town and certainly not the best atmosphere, so...
So where did you find the, articulated cockroach mounted in the frame? The dead one that, I don't know, when they mount them professionally preserved and stuff like that, where did you find that at?
It was on the internet also. You can find almost anything on the internet. I just typed in dead cockroaches and they popped up.
A grandmother with an eBay account. There we go. And what about the stamps? Did you have a good dealer that really helped you out acquire those, or just on your own?
No, I'm a member of the American Topical Association, and we have checklists. And so I contacted our director, and I said, do you have a listing for cockroaches? And she said, yes, I think we do. And there was like 12 or 15 on the list, and I took the list and just started shopping at shows like this and on the internet. And it took about a year and a half to get the 15 different issues. But they were relatively easy to find. They're mostly from sand dune countries, so there's not a lot of demand for those stamps in a general market. So they weren't hard to find.
But they became to know you as a lady looking for those stamps, or?
Yeah, I very quickly went from being known as the penguin lady to the cockroach lady.
Oh, okay.
So.
What do your grandkids think about your exhibit?
Oh, they won't even, they don't even like to go in the same room with it.
My first instinct when I first saw it was just grab my shoe, right. You know? Oh, my goodness, look at that. There's a roach. There's another one.
Right. The people at the show, I mean, I haven't been getting top awards with the exhibit, but everybody is having so much fun with it. And I have received a couple of favorite show, you know, of the show, and that's my goal. I didn't do it to win ribbons. I did it just to have fun and to see the reactions of the people. And it's fun just to stand back and watch the people at the exhibit. They'll see the cockroach clip and say, oh, well, I remember that, you know. And like you said, the dried ones, and it's just been a lot of fun.
So are you going to expand it to 5 frames?
It'll take several more months to do that and the material available, but that's what the judges seem to want me to do.
So now you got to find them on cover,
right.
Find some cockroach cancels.
In polite society doesn't like the cockroach. You've had the thought that anyone that has cockroaches in their homes, they're dirty homes, but that's not true. You know, it's anybody. You can have them in a mansion or you can have them in the slums of India. But it's kind of a mindset, you know. The house is dirty, you got cockroaches, and that's not true.
They're more of a general cleaning crew. They clean up the environment, I think.
Right, they do. And they're fantastic. They're finding out as lab rats, it's a substitute for lab rats because they eat almost anything. And there's certain varieties that they're actually using in medications now to treat asthma and blood clots. And there's some good advantages to the cockroach.
There's actually a famous cockroach that comes to mind, Disney Pixar movie WALL-E, his pet cockroach.
Right.
You know, we should get some of that in there.
It's in there. His name, the cockroach, was called Hal. He was never named in the movie.
Uh-huh.
They never used his name, but the cast and the crew named the cockroach Hal because the producer of the movie was Hal Roach. And so that's how Hal got his name.
Someone just beat me on Disney trivia. Oh, my goodness. Take notes, everybody. Wow. I was seeing Hal like Space Odyssey 2000, the computer. But no, Hal the Roach, the producer, that's even better. Wow. Well, we've gotten a lot of feedback from our listeners because we mentioned it was one of our favorite exhibits. And then all the listeners wrote in saying it was their favorite exhibit. And so I'm like, I got to find this lady and find out what was it about. So how did you, you went with women exhibitors to help you work on the exhibit? How did the mentorship work out?
Oh, they've just been wonderful. It's just a fellowship that we have that we Liz Heisey and Pat Walker just kind of take you under their arm and walk through the frame with you and show you different things that you can do to help improve it. The WE group are mentors for new beginners and novice in the exhibiting, and they share information about what weight paper to use and where to get this supply and where to get that, and it's a learning process, and we learn from the people that have done it before us.
Wow, they actually have me thinking about an exhibit for myself because they make it look fun.
It is. Well, you need to pick a topic that you like.
Yeah.
Because you do spend a lot of time with it in redoing it and all, and just doing the research behind it initially takes a tremendous amount of time. But if you love what you're doing, it's just like being on the job. If you love what you're doing, it's not a job. And I was looking for a hobby that I could do my own thing, not have somebody tell me exactly what I had to do. And the display class that this exhibit is in really just leaves the door wide open. I can add any kind of media to it, and there's not as strict guidelines for the display exhibit as there are for the revenues and the postal history and items like that.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Well, I've enjoyed sharing with you, and hope you have a chance to see it one day.
Okay, I'm sitting here with Liz Heisey, part of Women Exhibitors. She's going to tell us, give us an update about what she's been busy with since CESCAL of last year. So what have you guys got planned this year?
Not much. I mean, we've had a very good meeting here. We had about 15 of our members, and basically we were talking about our new next festival, which is coming up in 2016, September 1st to the 4th, at the Bullpex Show in Baltimore, outside Baltimore. And we were discussing what kind of seminars we wanted to produce, who we wanted to invite, and how we were going to organize it. In the past, we have had it as the Women Exhibitors Festival, but now I think we're going to promote it as being sponsored by the Women Exhibitors, so a lot more people feel that they can come and attend the seminars without feeling that they had to be a women exhibitor.
So do you have any new success stories you can share with me?
We have a lovely lady here who has done an exhibit on cockroaches, which has become very... She's only been doing it for a year and has got certainly a lot of attention. I mean, a lot of people go, ew! But it's a very fine exhibit. She's also got an exhibit on penguins. A lot of our members have been doing some new exhibits or expanding their current exhibits. Our membership is still staying very sort of steady at about 120 people. And no, it's been a quiet year. Usually the years between the festivals are relatively smooth.
Do you have any advice for new exhibitors? It's quite a huge undertaking, and it takes more than like a day to build an exhibit, definitely. So do you have any advice for them?
Yes, I mean, the problem is that everybody has collections or accumulations, and it's, you know, how do you get off the diving board? I mean, how do you make that first step? I mean, even myself, and I've been doing it for many years, still have a difficulty in trying to analyze my thoughts as how I want the exhibit to turn out. Basically, sometimes it's to write yourself a story about your collection and then try and flesh it out with stamps or with covers. And so, yeah, I would suggest starting with a storyline and then looking to see what you have in your collection that will fit in with the story.
So you think exhibits that tell a story are stronger than a list of facts?
Well, because there are in various types of divisions of the exhibiting, you have a traditional exhibit, which is the story of the stamp, how it was engraved, how it was made. In postal history, you're telling the story of the cover. Where did it go to? How much did it pay? Where did it come from? in display and illustrated mail, you're telling stories using the covers of the exhibit. I mean, I have an exhibit on how to make an apple pie, and I use the cachet, the vignette on the cover, to show how somebody makes an apple pie.
That's definitely a very good story. I'm a big fan of the apple pie. So, okay, so how might someone get in touch with you if they want to join?
If they want to join, they should go to the aap.org website and click on the button that says We, and they'll find an application form and directions on how to send in their very expensive dues, which is $5 a year. And for that, they will get 4 quarterly issues of our newsletter and access to as many mentors as possible. I would also suggest that they, while they're on the AAP website, that they join up with the AAP organization, where we offer mentoring services and feedback services, critique services for their title page and synopsis, and an additional help. I would also suggest that they come to New York 2016, where the AAP will have a large booth and we'll be offering a lot of workshops on exhibiting, exhibiting techniques, the fun of exhibiting, how you start exhibiting, and at our booth we'll be having hands-on directions of mounting exhibits and plenty of people that they can talk to about where do I go from here.
Because throwing up a blank frame in somebody and telling them to fill it is kind of intimidating.
Well, that's what I say. I mean, for somebody who is beginning, who has this large accumulation, if they write a story of what their passion is and why they're collecting and what do they want to show, it's less intimidating than looking at a blank. It's like writing a novel. Yes, when you first look at the blank pile of paper that you're going to write a novel, it's intimidating.
Thank you so much for your time again. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I'm sitting here with Gary Hendren of the Postmark Collectors Club, and he's going to tell us a little bit about his organization and what they do.
Well, our group has been in business since the mid-1940s, and it's a group that collects the postmarks on either piece or hopefully larger covers. And our main goal is to have in our museum a cancel from every town that's ever had a post office in the U.S. Plus, we'd like to have all the different cancels from the same post office in the U.S., Canada, and our territories.
So slogan cancels are right up your alley, huh?
We have a special slogan cancel collections. One contains about 55,000 different cut tubifores, and they're in order from always by savings stamps, savings bonds kind of thing, to zip code. So they're in alphabetical order, and it starts with Abilene and Brooklyn and Colorado Springs. So those, they're listed, or they're in the collection that way, but the slogan is alphabetical.
So what's your earliest memory of stamp collecting?
Oh, my earliest memory is while I was in maybe the junior high area, I went to a friend's house and he showed me his collection in his little room, and all of a sudden I said, well, I like to collect stamps. And I've pretty much been a collector since those early days. There's been some times where it wasn't always easy to do the collecting when you raising kids and going to college, but I always came back and been heavily involved in philately probably since at least the 1980s. I know I joined the APS in 77, I believe, and that really got me into knowing people all over the country.
So what's the gem of your collection?
That may be hard to say, although I do have a favorite until a better one comes along. In one of our collections, we have a full cover. It's bigger than a number 6 size envelope, but it's dated Columbus, Ohio. It's a double circle date stamp, and then on the cover, it's a patriotic from 1862, so there's a big rooster on the left-hand side of the cover in full bloom, and then there's a prison bar cancel on the stamp in the lower right corner. And, you know, I'm sure dealers would ask a pretty good price if that were in their hands and I were going to be the buyer.
What's a prison bar cancel? What does that look like?
It's just a rectangle with bars across it, just like a prison bar. So,
what was it used for?
Just to kill the stamp, you know,
okay.
to make the stamp not usable again.
I've never heard that before. I learn something new every day.
Yeah. Well, it would be considered a fancy cancel of that nature. But that's been my favorite that I've seen in the museum in my 15 years, I guess, of being involved there.
So you said you're a curator?
I am the curator.
Of what museum?
Of the Postmark Collectors Club Museum.
Oh.
Located in Bellevue, Ohio, which is about 20 miles south and a little west of Sandusky, and again about halfway between Cleveland and Toledo.
Okay, wow. So how might someone get in touch with you to join your organization?
Well, they could go to our website, postmarks.org, and my email is included on there. There's also information about joining, and there's a lot of other information there about cancels. But the information for the form for joining is listed on there. It's $20, I think, and that includes 11 issues. We have one double month issue, usually sometime around convention time. And we've had an annual convention since 1962, and it's located in various places around the country.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Enjoy talking with you.
I'm sitting with Lloyd DeVries. He's going to tell us about the American First Day Cover Society.
We are a national organization of first day cover enthusiasts, collectors, and dealers. We have been in operation. This is our 60th anniversary, in fact. We publish a full-color, professionally edited journal 6 times a year. We have an annual show that moves around the country to different areas. We encourage exhibiting. We encourage first-day cover servicing and scholarship and cachet making. That's putting our designs on first-day covers.
Okay, so explain how to make a cachet. Like, what goes into that?
There are many ways to do it. You can do everything from a potato print to using oil paints and acrylics. So it's kind of a broad question to ask. Many people these days use a computer and design the artwork on a computer, then feed the envelopes into their inkjet printers. However, some of us take our material to a professional printer to print out. Some people paint them by hand.
I've seen some beautiful hand-painted, they're really just works of art. It, definite penmanship involved. They stand out when you see them compared to, like, the printed on the computer.
Yes, but these people have great talent. The rest of us make do with what we have.
That's true. I can't draw anything. So, did you guys create the cover for this show?
We did not. Okay. We produced a cover for Ingrid Bergman's stamp, which is being issued on the same, well, was issued on the same as the first day of this show. We did not produce a show cover, as it were. We did, however, produce show covers for our own show, which was a week ago.
Oh, okay, tell me about that. How was that put together?
Can we do show and tell with this?
Yes.
This is our program for our show a week ago, and it's a little different than this one. It's 3 days instead of four. It's a lot more informal. We do, however, have exhibits. We have dealers. We have a tour the day before the show. We have a food event, going out to dinner together the night after the show closes. We actually like each other. And everything is first day covers. It's kind of nice to be in a room with everybody on the same page we are. We don't have to worry about Lithuanian inverted revenues or something else. Everybody is into first day covers who's there, or at least tolerates us.
So what's your earliest memory of stamp collecting?
Oh, I guess around 8 years old, I was putting stamps in a kid's album that my father or my mother or both had gotten me. I remember it was a blue and yellow hardcover, but it was like a children's book.
So you started pretty young then. When did you get into cachets?
I started producing my own cachets seriously as I get, in 1983. And with the Metropolitan Opera issue, I call them dragon cards. They're 5x7. They're cards, usually. They're usually 5x7. They're usually cards, but not always. That's my line, and I can do whatever I want with it. Before that, I dabbled here and there. I would do an occasional cachet.
Okay, and how might someone get in contact with you to join your organization?
The easiest way is to write AFDCS at AFDCS.org.
Well, that's easy enough. Well, it's been really good talking to you. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Okay, you can email us at stampshowtoday@gmail.com, Twitter at stampshowht, Facebook stampshowtoday, and our website www.stampshowtoday.com with your questions and comments. You can now leave your questions and comments on our Google Voice answer machine anytime, country code 1-949-873-4298. There is also a link to a Google Voice on our website so you can make the call from your computer. And on that note, keep collecting.
Hi, I'm Rick Penko. I'm from Daniel F. Kelleher Auctions, and I'm at the Grand Rapids Show, and you are listening to the greatest podcast that you can hear on stamp collecting today.
Hi, this is Bobby Prager with Gary Posner Incorporated, based in Long Island, New York, and New Jersey. And I just want to say that the stamp hobby is alive and well here, and we love buying and selling stamps. We pay very, very, very good prices, so we'd rather buy 9 out of 10 collections than just a very small percentage of what we see. Also, check us out on our website at GaryPosnerInc.com. You'll see a lot of great stamps at great prices. And any questions, just feel free to call Bob at 1-800-323-4279. That's Bob Prager at 1-800-323-4279. And my cell number is 917-538-8133. Happy hunting out there.
This episode of Stamp Show Here Today is brought to you by the Philatelic Book of Secrets, the book that teaches you about repurfs, regums, color varieties, and much more. Get yours for $10 at www.philatelicsecrets.com today.
No such number, no such soul, return to sender.